areas in Oregon and around the country. This chart shows, for comparative purposes, where we are versus cities like Atlanta and Honolulu and Seattle, all of which are struggling with getting going with their combined sewer overflow abatement programs. People like Cincinnati and those cities have moved ahead of us, having completed our CSO investment. We're beginning to see some major cities like Knoxville and even cities like Kansas City, that right now is fairly low on the list, they're moving up rapidly as they face over a $3 billion CSO abatement program. So, and the final slide is, actually there are two more slides. One is to show what the projected rates forecast look like moving into the future. You can see us there now just above 5%. We're looking at a future of dropping below 5 and reaching about 4% in 2018. And the final slide is just a comparative, for comparative purposes, with sanitary system development charges. A lot of interest in this, how we stack up comparatively. You can see the cities above us from the region, and there's a few below us, but we're comfortably in the lower half of the chart. And Mayor, that completes my presentation. Happy to answer any questions from the council, and I'll be glad to stand by and respond to any other questions that come up.
Maybe for public's sake, to understand that two slides back, that gradual decrease in forecasted rates, explain the mechanics of that. It's driven a lot by capital, by the CSO debt. Why do we project this gradual decline in rate increases? And is it real, not aspirational?
It's both, I would like to say. Just a quick context. When the city decided how to fund the CSO investment, the $1.5 billion investment, it was done by borrowing a lot of money and paying some cash as well as we went. So we still have those debt payments to make well into the future. It also was that we would levelize the rate increases. So, yes, they went up, and they were up pretty substantially, but they were not projected at that point to zip back to zero. They were always projected to sort of arc out into the future, and that really is that arc you see. It is built also on a rather substantial capital investment program in the next 5 years, about a $500 million CIP. And I know that on your direction, we will be talking about that in the next few months, about is that the right level of investment given the state of our infrastructure. So it is quite possible that arc that you saw on that chart could change based on decisions the council makes about what level of investment to make in the future.
So there is still, that's why I wanted to bring that up, there's still discretion there for the council looking forward. Yes, we have to pay the bonds for
yes.
CSO and other previous capital investments, but
right.
There's still decisions to make about the level of effort for capital investments going forward.
Exactly right. That's a projected chart, which is always subject to change, just as you made changes this year, and that changed the forecast from what it would have been to what it is now.
Thank you. Other questions for Dean or Jim?
I have a question about the some of the cuts.
Yes.
It seems the mayor is proposing to fund a number of things with general fund and move them to parks, many of the watershed programs. But in particular, the Friends of Trees or the tree plantings, it looks to me that it's $783,000 that's proposed to be general funded in parks, but then there's a cut of $343,000. Is that correct?
Yes, that's right. Some of the tree planting would be moved to parks and funded out of general fund. We still will spend roughly $1 million next year on trees, but this substantially changes the mix, and more of it goes to parks.
But there is a $343,000 cut overall?
I don't recall whether that's
the total
or not.
Scott's here.
Thank you. And then what is the $100,000 cut to the Columbia Slough? What is that going to not fund?
The Columbia Slough, as you know, although the water quality is greatly improved, there's still some sediment contamination issues in the Columbia Slough in a variety of places. We've been working with DEQ and neighboring landowners to address those We have, I think, about a $2 million budget next year on slough sediment work. This would be a slight reduction in that because the...
It was difficult for me to look through your budget both when it was presented and now, and it would be helpful if you could tell me what's left in BES of the things that have been cut, like the Columbia Slough. So knowing that there's 100,000, it would be. I want to know what exactly is not going to get done in that, but then also what's the rest of the Columbia Slough program. So if you could get me that before next week, I'd really
Certainly,
appreciate it.
Yes, and it's a good point. I know, and you'll hear from our Budget Advisory Committee in a moment, but one of the things we tried to do as we met with them throughout the fall and winter was to provide just what you described, which is a great question. So you're talking about trimming this. What does that leave?
Remains, right.
So I'm, on that line, can you tell me offhand if the EcoRoof incentives is proposed to take a $447,000 cut? Is there anything left in EcoRoof incentives?
The EcoRoof program will still exist as far as providing technical assistance, which we're very vigorous with, but the financial check writing from the city to people putting eco-roofs on their roof would end. We've done that for several years. We've put quite a bit of money out there. We've expanded the eco-roof acreage in the city dramatically as a result. I think we've accomplished that goal to show that eco-roofs make financial sense as well as environmental sense. We will continue to work with people to encourage them, as we're working with Portland Public Schools, for instance, with their major re-roofing projects around the city. We've already gone out in the field and met with them and provided technical assistance, and we'll continue to do that. But as far as writing people a check, this would end that practice.
And has there been any analysis done of what the impact, whether the projects would still get done without the assistance?
Well, I think it will end up being a case-by-case situation. I do know, for instance, with Portland Public Schools, the amount of money they've set aside and raised to do school reconstruction. I think it's very affordable. It makes sense for them. After all, they're a long-term landlord. They're going to maintain these buildings for a very long time. A company like Walmart, they can certainly afford their own eco roof. They don't need a check from us.
Right, but if the cost of the eco roof is more expensive than a regular traditional roof, then that's the grants have helped make that pencil out, correct?
And simple. What they've done, I think they've done their job to demonstrate how they work and how they're maintained. And we now have a whole cadre of happy owners around the city that are happy to share that information with prospective people.
Yeah, I think the other factor there is the most powerful force in terms of what people build, I think, in the current private sector construction market is the LEED program. Not whatever incentives we might offer. Mm-hmm. And now we have, through good public policy, over time, sort of lit the fire, and it's now sustaining combustion of people competing with each other for the greenest building mm-hmm. on a private basis without much incentive anymore. There was on the energy front and on eco roofs in the early stages of both of those innovations, a lot more public support. But now you talk to any private developer, and they'll tell you that their tenants are demanding at least a LEED Gold building, and mm-hmm. they're going to stretch to platinum if they can pull it off. And you know, they're being driven by the market in the direction where we led them originally. So I think it's one of those cases where early on we had to do more than we have to do now.
Mm-hmm. So, Dean, when you said we will spend $1 million on trees, that's we as a city?
Yeah. So, environmental services, through a whole variety of work that we do with watershed services, will spend roughly $1 million, even with the changes in the proposed budget.
Okay, so that's solely within BES, you're saying?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then I was just curious, talking about schools and retrofits, the mm-hmm. Green Bucks contribution fund?
Yes.
What's the fund balance for people voluntarily pay money to go to retrofitting, stormwater retrofits for schools?
Yes. I will have to get back to you on that. That's a good question. I have not looked at that in some time. But we can get you a status report on that.
I want to know if I'm the only one that's doing
that. No, you and I are.
Oh, okay, there's two.
Maybe there's $100 in the fund. I really don't know.
Okay.
I'll get back to you. Good question.
Dean, just academic curiosity. I noted that our The monthly bills are lower than Lake Oswego's, but significantly higher than Gresham's. I also noticed that SDCs, that those reversed, and I was just curious, what do you think accounts for the difference in our bills and those local jurisdictions, and is it possible that they're taking a different approach to subsidizing bills through SDCs, or what are some of the other factors?
Hmm. That's a good question. I don't know, Jim, whether you thought about that. I hadn't really thought about it. I hadn't really noticed that.
I can offer you conjecture, not necessarily facts. In the case of SDCs, there are a variety of different ways that you can charge them. Portland is a reimbursement fee, which is based on the value of past capital investments. It may be that Gresham does what's called an improvement fee, which is based on your capital plan going forward. And depending on what methodology you use, the SDC charge can swing around quite a bit. As far as the monthly charge, we had a CSO program. To my knowledge, they don't. And so it's the legacy of that program in large part that drives our monthly bill. And I'd be surprised if Gresham had any major capital expenditure like that in their history.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. We'll stand by in case you have other questions.
Thank you very much. Okay. Take testimony.
Yes, we have five people signed up. The first three, please come on up, are Charlie Van Rossen, Bob Solinger, and Mike Houck.
Good morning. Go ahead, Mr. Van Rossen. You're on first.
Mayor, Council, I'm a member of the Portland Utility Review Board, and speaking on behalf of the Portland Utility Review Board, the Council will be pleased to learn that the PURB endorses the Mayor's proposed budget for the Bureau of Environmental Services. The PURB appreciates the Mayor's efforts to reduce BES's proposed budgeted costs, helping keep utility rates in check. Three of the PURB's members also participated with the BES Budget Advisory Committee, or BAC. The BAC supported full add-back of BES's proposed budget cuts. The BAC, however, did prioritize which cuts should be made or added back in the event the Mayor and City Council decided to reduce BES's operating costs. The Mayor has followed the BAC's recommended weighting of these costs in effectively reducing the 2013-2014 annual budget. The PURB especially appreciates the Mayor's efforts to remove non-core operating costs from BES's budget and to preserve and place these costs into other bureaus that better identify with such expenditures. The PURB has long been a proponent of keeping non-core operating expenses out of the utility bureau's budgets. The BAC included a comment in its letter to the Mayor and Council regarding the flow of money between bureaus. The PURB is encouraged by the Mayor's efforts to begin this process of segregating each bureau's operating costs on a case-by-case and bureau-by-bureau basis. Finally, the PURB reiterates the BAC's comment regarding keeping both the BAC and PURB engaged through the entire budget process. The citizen volunteers on the BAC and PURB donate considerable time working with bureau staff to understand the operating budgets. We believe that the BAC and PURB can give valuable insight to the Council and the city throughout the budget process. Thank you for your time and your support of the PURB.
Thank you, and thanks to you and the other members for volunteering all that time. Mike, are you next? Bob, who's on first?
Good morning, Mayor Hales and members of Portland City Council. My name is Bob Solinger. I'm the Conservation Director for the Audubon Society of Portland. Last time I was here, it was to celebrate the United Nations Environmental Program's designation of Portland as the host of World Environment Day. And so it's ironic that I'm back today to talk about what we consider to be the dismantling, significant dismantling, of BES programs that we believe are at the core of how we arrived at this point and got that designation. There are many things that set Portland apart when it comes to the environment, but the thing that makes us truly different, is the integration of the built and the natural environment. Lots of cities do sustainability, transportation. Portland truly protects the green in the city. And we don't believe it's hyperbole to say that one of the reasons we're able to do that is we have probably the best urban environmental agency in the world. There's very little that compares to the expertise and the programs that Portland has been able to develop through its Bureau of Environmental Services. We believe that this budget takes us back 25 years, both in substance and in philosophy, to a time when BES was basically a sewer agency and this city did not have an environmental agency. The proposed budget guts the BES watershed program and leaves creative greening programs on unstable and unsustainable and uncertain ground. BES watershed program is taking a 25% hit, hugely disproportionate to the other programs in BES. Early detection and rapid response, one of the cornerstone programs of the city, gone. Eco-Ruse, gone. Community watershed grants, gone. Two river planning positions at Planning Bureau, gone. I want to be clear here. The environmental community didn't say don't cut, and we didn't say don't make changes. We wanted to work hand in hand with the city to do Greater Green 2.0, not to cling to the past, but to do something that was more sustainable, more stable, more equitable, and is better at leveraging outside resources. We've been actively engaged with the mayor's office from the time you took office, and we've already had meetings. We've had Josh at those meeting, at one of the meetings. We're meeting again this afternoon. The environmental community is willing to step up, willing to see changes. We think we can make a bigger, better, greener, more sustainable Greater Green program, but not with the proposed cuts that are on the table. What troubles us most is not necessarily the changes, but the philosophy that seems to underlie it, which seems to say that green infrastructure does not belong on the rates. And it seems to say that BES should not be a watershed protection agency any longer, that it's back to being a sewer agency. And we heard that very clearly yesterday when we met with the mayor's office. We asked for a couple of things for your consideration in this budget. First, we ask that you consider, whether it's general funds or rates, putting that money into BES first and foremost to stabilize the programs where they currently exist. There may be some movement that needs to occur. We don't necessarily oppose that. But stabilize the expertise and the experience within BES even as you make these changes. Use this as a bridge year. Don't just gut those programs and move them around randomly. Number two, make a real commitment to putting some of the green infrastructure on the rates. If you look at BES's mission, it's absolutely appropriate. The only way that we are going to meet our CSO requirements and our MS4 requirements is by stabilizing and increasing the green infrastructure. But we can't do that without a stable funding source. And putting it on the general fund and hoping for bond measures and levies down the road puts it on incredibly unstable ground. And so as we celebrate the city's past environmental accomplishments on World Environment Day, let's work together to double down on creating a cleaner, greener, healthier future for our city. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. Morning.
Mayor Hales, commissioners. I was around when the Bureau of Environmental Services mission was...
Put your name in the record, Mike.
My name is Michael Charles Houck. I'm here representing the Urban Green Spaces Institute. Thank you for reminding me that. I was around when the mission was, in fact, changed from a sewer bureau to, and I'll just quote it, Environmental Services protects public health, water quality, the environment by providing sewage and stormwater collection and treatment services for the Portland community. We protect the quality of surface and groundwaters and conduct and promote healthy ecosystems in our watershed. And I would agree with Bob that we have an agency that does stand out across the nation and internationally, which is why a lot of folks are visiting here from Europe and throughout the United States. Green infrastructure is now a key element of BES's mission, program, and culture. And as Bob mentioned, we're talking about 25% cut of the green infrastructure programs. In our opinion, all of the green infrastructure programs are legitimately funded by stormwater rates. And the thing that disturbs me the most is that yesterday it was suggested that those things that are are proposed to be put in the general fund, rather than being funded in the future, and I agree with Bob, we're more than happy to sit down and talk about what makes sense in terms of which bureau delivers which service. But when I'm told that in the future, we're going to look at levies and bond measures to fund things that should be on in the rates. And we all know how difficult it is to pass those levies. You, Mayor Hales, certainly have had a lot of experience in trying to pass park bonds. So I can imagine we're out there competing with children levies, park levies, to fund fundamental programs within the Bureau of Environmental Services makes absolutely no sense. We've also been told recently that BES should not own the city's environmental agenda, that environmental programs should be spread throughout the city. Absolutely agree. Every bureau has a responsibility to address environmental issues. But there has to be a single entity within the city, and that is the Bureau of Environmental Services. And again, they have amassed an incredible amount of expertise within that bureau that is serving all the other bureaus within the city. And I just want to make the argument that to start decentralizing that effort by taking apart the green infrastructure program within BES is contrary to where the city should be headed. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we did pass out, actually, two documents. The first one, Bob and I actually co-authored, the summary of the regional conservation strategy for the region, for the entire Portland-Vancouver metropolitan region, which hits on green infrastructure issues, climate change, and so forth. And then more recently, we have a publication called Our Common Ground. And in it, we issue three challenges to elected officials from throughout the region, one of which is to increase the percentage of investment in stormwater managed through green infrastructure. That's for all the jurisdictions within the region. And if you look on page 19, we specifically call out one of the great examples of how by combining gray, and we're not talking about competing gray with green infrastructure, it's both. It's green and gray infrastructure. In the Tabor to the River program, the City of Portland will save ratepayers $63 million by integrating the gray and the green infrastructure. So we're using the City of Portland to talk to Beaverton, to talk to other metropolitan, other cities about how they can increase their efficiency, improve environmental quality at a lower cost. And I think we need to keep our leadership role in that regard.
Great. Thank you.
Any questions?
Thanks very much.
Mr. Mayor, may I ask a couple of questions?
Sure.
On the issue of a 25% cut, how much of that is an absolute cut and how much of that is movement of previous BES slash rate-funded programs to general fund other agency programs?
My understanding is it's a 25% cut, that the program's taking a hard 25% cut. Also, stuff is being, this keeps going on and off, but also stuff is being moved out of the program as well. But I would defer to staff to answer that for certain. But my understanding was it's a hard 25% cut and then the movement out of the program as well.
And just to clarify something that I think I understood, but just want to make it very clear, are you suggesting that even to the extent that some of these programs are moved to the general fund, you think that BES has more expertise in watershed management than parks, for example, so you'd rather have those general fund programs stay in BES than move to parks and other agencies?
In general, yes. I'm not saying that nothing should move to parks. The park ranger and Forest Park, for example, there are some other examples I think that do make sense that can be done in the short term. But I think in the bigger picture, it makes sense to maintain the infrastructure at BES to continue to perpetuate these programs and then work over the next year to see what kinds of realignments really make sense. We're very concerned that if we precipitously remove all these programs from BES, put them on the general fund, and distribute them among other bureaus, that they're going to fall apart before we figure it out. And we'll lose that expertise within BES. We'll lose that work that's been done over the past 10, 20 years, but really the past 10 years has been a real building process. It'll be a shame to lose that before we really do a good analysis of how we want to reorganize and what Greater Green 2.0 looks like.
And to be very clear, we wouldn't even be here today had we not learned that there is no real plan out there how to deal with this in the future. We were told to, you know, let it go this year, that we're going to come back and we'll try to do all the work that Bob referred to. We're more than happy to do that, but we're very concerned about the shift in philosophy which seems to be occurring within the city.
Okay. Other questions? Thanks. Other folks that are testifying?
Thank you.
John Gibbon and Jim Robeson.
Good morning. Good to see you again this week. I'm John Gibbon. I'm a resident in Southwest Portland. I'll testify in a little bit as a member of PERB, but this testimony is my own personal opinion about this issue that Mike and Bob raised with you. And I've got to say, I probably decided to sign up because I saw my colleague Mike Houck was going to testify, and the first time we shared a table was in front of the U.S. Congress in about 1977 talking about Bull Run issues. So I think we've had a little bit of environmental experience to draw on here. And I will tell you, I come at this at a little different take than Mike and Bob, although I think we agree a lot of the time. I consider myself trained as a natural resource lawyer, and I had to put up with the environmentalists when I was in law school. And I will totally agree with you, Mayor Hales, that there is some element in environmentalism of aesthetics. I mean, I've struggled with that my entire career in dealing with natural resources issues, and I will tell you that I understand the concern, but I don't know how we sort it out. I worry about taking money that's coming from the ratepayers and saying we need to spend dollars on infrastructure, not aesthetics, out of the mix when we're having this discussion about green to gray 2.0 or wherever we're going. And that's my only concern, that what I'm hearing Mike and Bob say is we've got to have this discussion. We all recognize it. And I completely understand that there's an issue of aesthetics, and other members of PERB share your concern about the aesthetics. But what I will tell you is, as a stream team captain for Solve, I can't tell you that the rose bush I plant on a stream corridor is more for aesthetics than it is for watershed health and clean water issues. So we've got to have the discussion. Maybe we need to make some cuts and take a look at it, but please, please don't take us out of the green to gray business. Do the 2.0. Thank you.
Morning, Jim.
Hi, I'm Jim Robinson. I'm a resident of North Portland. I'm chair of the Portland Harbor Community Advisory Group. I'm not here speaking on behalf of the Community Advisory Group, but as chair, I'm speaking from my own experiences as a resident of the community and being involved in a lot of the issues regarding the Superfund cleanup of the Willamette River. I am concerned by the elimination from the budget of the Office of Healthy and Working Rivers, and the reason that raises a concern for me is largely the same reasons that both Bob and Mike mentioned, which is moving away from the view that we have a responsibility of maintaining the overall watershed health and really establishing that we have a healthy watershed in total, and moving towards the view that the Willamette River and all the rivers are simply ditches to drain water out of the area. And I want to ensure that we don't move in that direction towards simply viewing our system as a drainage system and looking at it as a really healthy system that needs to be maintained and continued. I agree with much of what Bob and Mike said regarding some of the cuts to the budget that are proposed, and I want to ensure that this is maintained over time, that we continue to view ourselves as good environmental stewards. One of the reasons that the elimination of the Office of Healthy Working Rivers concerns me is that that office is a way to actually bring together the interests that are of concern to all of the different bureaus. Instead of being in one bureau as a bureau looking at one issue, we have an office that can bring together issues from environmental services and from building development services and issues looking at jobs as well as looking at overall health and community and looking at it in how the rivers affect the entire community so that we can bring all that together and be sure that we have a whole picture.
Thank you.
Jim, how do you, as the somebody who's worked on the Harbor Advisory Committee for a long time, how has the Office of Healthy Working Rivers interacted with it, and how do you see it being important moving forward?
Well, one thing that I've really appreciated over the last several years is that representatives from Healthy Working Rivers Office have been participating at the level that we're participating as a community advisory group. They've been attending our meetings. They've been participating with us when we deal with issues with EPA and DEQ. And so having that interaction with the community has been very valuable, because we get the feedback from the city of what's happening at city level, and they get feedback from the community, so that it brings it together to all the different bureaus instead of just being one bureau's perspective.
Thanks.
And moving forward, what were you expecting from them as we move to the next phase?
Well, the city is in the interesting position of being on two sides of the Superfund cleanup. On the one side, the city is responsible for a lot of cleanup, and on the other side, the city is responsible for representing the community and being involved with the community. And I expected the Office of Healthy and Working Rivers would be overseeing a lot of that, or undertaking a lot of that community outreach and community involvement, to make sure that we have a real solid input from members of the community in how the cleanup occurs and what we see for the future of the river. You know, one thing I like to remind people of is that when a question comes up of how clean do we need the river when only a few people are fishing there anyway, we have to remember that for thousands of years, the Willamette River provided food for thousands of people. It's only relatively recently that it hasn't provided that food. And that's a perspective that doesn't get seen when you're only looking at it as a way to remove wastewater. But if you're looking at it as a way to really develop the community and restore what we have as a resource for the community, that's something that can be brought in by having an office, the Office of Healthy Working Rivers, instead of just looking at it as a way to remove stormwater or remove wastewater.
Thanks. Other questions for Jim or John? Thank you both. Thanks very much. Anyone else signed up to testify?
That's all who signed up.
Questions for staff before we close the hearing? Not, we can follow up later. Okay, thank you. This will move to second reading.
Presumably we take comments about this at the budget hearings.
Bet.
Thank you.
And now we'll move to the next item.
Item 426, authorize the rates and charges for water and water-related services during the fiscal year beginning July 1, 2013 to June 30, 2014, and fix an effective date.
Morning.
You going to help us? Okay.
One of these days we'll have a PowerPoint system in this chamber that, you know, those of us who operate PowerPoint can actually do it one at a time.
Good morning. I'm David Schaff. I'm the director of the, the Portland Water Bureau. With me is Cecilia Hoon, who is the finance manager for the Water Bureau. I'm going to launch right into our presentation. Our overall budget, as you mentioned, Mayor Hales, is looking at a 3.6% rate increase, down from 7.8 and actually down from 14.8, which we were projecting at about this time last year. our total budget is about $203 million, and of that, $79 million is our operating budget. We are looking at an ongoing reduction of just under $11 million as part of our process that we've been going through throughout the year, and then when you were elected and directed the bureaus, excuse me, to come up with additional cuts beyond those that we were proposing, and then finally the final cuts that we were looking at over the last several weeks. Excuse me. We also have a proposed $124 million capital budget. Our revenues are that come from rates and charges are projected to be about $140 million. Of that, retail is about $119 million. Our wholesale customers, about $16 million. Other fees and charges, $3.5 million, and then a fairly modest amount from SDCs of $1.5 million. We anticipate ending up as an organization that has 575 full-time employees. It's down from about 30 uh, just under 40, 39 and a half FTEs. The primary drivers for this year's rate increase, and it's both increases and decreases, are the ones that you're familiar with, our capital improvement plan. You know, we have two reservoir projects going on right now at Powell Butte and Kelly Butte, and we're beginning the design process for Washington Park. We have the interstate facility that we're replacing, and we have our habitat conservation plan work that we're doing, the Dam 2 towers. That's in addition to the normal things that we do every year in a capital plan, pipes, services, hydrants, pump stations, that sort of thing. We've had some good economic factors that have helped lower the rates. We have a lower COLA, cost of living increase. We had lower interest earnings. We sold bonds at 2.96%, I believe it was, a couple weeks ago. That was a very good bond sale. Our borrowing rates benefited from that. We're in the last year of those deferred rate increases that we did in 2006 and 2007. That has an impact on our rates. We also have lower retail demand that we've been talking about, which we've been adjusting to. Our operating budget reductions that I mentioned are primarily focused around modified security function. Instead of having the fixed posts, we will be primarily a dispatch monitoring system that will rely on cameras and the Portland Police Bureau for response. As you know, we've transferred, or we're transferring, the decorative fountains back to the parks. Those are the decorative and interactive fountains like Salmon Springs, Skidmore, Keller, not the Benson Bubblers. A reduction in grounds maintenance around facilities, reduction in administrative and support functions, reduction in our customer service department. And then, as Mayor Hales mentioned, both the lower proposed cost of living increase that the city has in general at the collective bargaining table, and a delayed COLA for the non-represented employees. And then lastly, the PERS reform changes all had a positive impact on that rate. The overall retail rate increase is, as the mayor said, 3.6%. As Dean was describing, we have a variety of other charges that apply. Those are generally up at about the same percentage, although some are less, some are about the same, and some are more. We have tried to do full cost of recovery on things like petition mains and that sort of thing. Our SDCs, system development charges, are increasing by 20%, primarily due to all of the capital work that we're doing. That raises our basic residential SDC from 1,817 to 2,183. And you'll see in a coming slide that we are next to Milwaukee, the lowest in the region as far as SDCs, as much as a half or two-thirds lower than some of our other comparable jurisdictions. We remain well before our regional, well below other regional providers. We do still provide waivers for affordable housing and temporary ADU exemptions, ADU accessory dwelling units. We have, as I said, fixed charges for services, mains, and other development fees. Those are things that where we have agreed that when you're putting in a 6-inch main for 1,000 feet with asphalt, it will cost X amount, and we guarantee that amount. That's something we've been doing for the last several years. Those charges get updated every year based on the actual cost of doing comparable projects. Our water bills, our typical residential monthly bill will increase by 96 cents from $26.65 to $27.61. That's for the typical residential customer who uses 500 cubic feet of water. Our low-income residential monthly bill will increase by 47%, or 3.6%, from $13.33 to $13.80. Our medium commercial typical bill, which is 100 CCF, increases $13.08. And Portland water bills represent about 5% of the average utility services for retail residential customers. And I'm going to cover that in just a second. So for the new volume, what we call the volumetric charge of $3.44 for 100 cubic feet or 748 gallons, I happened to be out and about last night, and at my local Fred Meyer, I can buy a gallon of water for 99 cents. I'll provide you 214 gallons for that same 99 cents at your tap. And I went to a grocery store last night, and they were selling bottled water for $1.50 a pint. And for that $1.50, I sell 325 gallons at the tap. So if you look at the next page, our average utility services, we are the lowest of the required and non-required average utility services in the region. We're lower for the first time than solid waste, and we've always been lower than all of the others. Obviously, not everybody has a cell phone, and some people have cell phones that are much more expensive than what we have proposed, what we have reflected here. But it's intended to give a general idea of how water compares to other utilities.
Mr. Schaff?
Yes.
I just have to ask, how much would you have to raise the rates in order to add HBO and a full Major League Baseball package to your services?
It would be quite a bit, Commissioner. This is just your basic cable package. Looking at the next slide, it's similar to material that Dean shared a minute ago. It's a comparison of proposed typical monthly residential utility bills. As you can see, Portland ranks right in the middle of what the typical water portion of a bill is. That's not true of the combined bill. We recognize that. I think we're the second highest behind Lake Oswego. But from the water perspective, and that's the base charge and the volume charge, we're right in the middle of the regional, our regional partners. Typical, as I mentioned, our system development charges are going up, but they are still the lowest. If you look at the next slide, our 2183 compares to just about half of Gresham's and a third of Tualatin Valley Water Districts. And then if you look at the next slide, we've expanded beyond those four or five and compared it to people in the general broader Willamette Valley area. You'll see that our STCs are the lowest among, or almost the lowest next to Milwaukee. That presents my, completes my formal presentation, and of course I'm available to answer any questions you may have.
Great. Any questions?
Please. So David, you talked about your FTE going from, or being reduced by 39.5 FTEs.
Yes.
So how many of those are vacant positions?
About 25 of them are vacant. The others are, the rest are filled.
And have you had some success with the retirement incentive?
Yes. I was going to add, Commissioner, we knew that we were going to be taking cuts this year. So as positions became vacant over the course of the year, we identified those that we were not going to fill and that we would eliminate. So though we've been, if you will, banking those vacancies. And yes, Mayor Hales, I was frankly surprised. We have probably 8 positions that we were not anticipating that would that we may be able to eliminate as a result of those VRIP, the Voluntary Retirement Incentive Programs.
Good. That's great. Other questions?
Actually, Mr. Mayor, I just wanted to offer a comment, actually two comments, one specific to water and one that applies to both water and BES. On water, I just wanted to say that when the Bureau, which I happen to have the honor of having for a month, presented its initial budget and said that it was going to delete funding for maintenance of the decorative fountains, there was at least one local media outlet that said that that was a Washington Monument strategy. It would never actually happen. And Mr. Schaff thought, and I agreed, that if we're going to focus the Water Bureau on its core services, taking the decorative fountains out of that and out of the rates made sense. And I was pleased to see, Mr. Mayor, that you
agreed with that, but also agreed that it is important to maintain the decorative fountains and to shift them to parks and to the general fund. So I thought that was a very appropriate resolution. I also just wanted to note publicly something I think I've discussed with each of you privately, which is that the Citizens Utility Board, which has a long and distinguished history of being a fair and effective advocate for ratepayers in the context of electric rates and natural gas rates, has suggested that we come up with a way for them to fold playing a watchdog role on the water and sewer rates into their portfolio, and they've come up with a proposal for that which wouldn't require any city money. And I hope that that's something we explore over the next year, because I think that it would, I think they do very good work and would give the public comfort to know that there's an independent entity with a good track record looking at water and sewer rates.
Great, thank you.
I appreciate that suggestion, Commissioner Novick. I also want to remind those of us who are here and reintroduce the concept that we had talked about having utility experts in the city budget office. And so perhaps, Mayor, there needs to be a conversation after this budget is done and after the bureaus are assigned and the new commissioner in charge of water in particular and of environmental services has a chance to see what he or she can do for starters within those bureaus, but then also returning so we can have a comprehensive discussion about what is the appropriate analysis and who should be doing it, and should we be bolstering the capacity of the city budget office to assist with that.
Good point.
Director Schaff, I have very much appreciated in past years you've given us a breakdown of specifically of what the rate increase goes for, and it's probably in the information that I have, but if you could have your staff go back and give me what was the 14% that was projected last year, what were the elements of that, and then what are the differences so that it's down to 3.6%, because it's over a 10% difference, and I'd like to figure out what is it that we're not going to be doing that we thought we were going to be doing. The other question I have is there an element in the rate increase for paying for decommissioning the reservoirs and doing the changes to the Washington Park Reservoir?
No on decommissioning. That's yet down the road by at least 2 years still at Mount Tabor. And then, if I understand your question correctly, a qualified yes on Washington Park, because we've started to work on the design process, and that is several millions of dollars. So that is budgeted to begin this fiscal year.
And the capital improvements for that are also budgeted in the capital improvements plan?
They're in our five-year CIP. Obviously, it'll be, I think it's another 3 years before we actually begin construction. We're at the planning, permitting, design stage on Washington Park.
Okay. So to my colleagues on the council, the news that the Oregon Health Authority is not going to give us an extension on the timeline for taking the open reservoirs offline has come in since the budget process started. It seems to me it would be prudent to put some money into the budget, part general fund in parks and part from the Water Bureau, to start the public process for the discussion of what's going to happen to the Mount Tabor reservoirs after in a couple of years, as you say, Director Schaff. That needs to be an inclusive public process that we should be thinking about now rather than, oops, we've got these large containers full of water and what are we going to do with them? So I would suggest that we amend the mayor's proposed budget to add that. And that also reminds me off the subject, but I forgot to mention it in the first time certain that we had this today, and that is adding $30,000 for the earned sick leave process at the city. This has nothing to do with, you're looking like you should be writing this down, but no, this is back to, again, something that we were hoping that the state legislature would take action on earned sick leave. It's still alive, but not exactly kicking at the legislature. So I think that we need to be budgeting $30,000 for work on that. And there may be a partnership with the Water Bureau, including some notices in water bills to let folks know, both employers and employees, about our earned sick leave regulations that will go into effect in January.
Thank you.
Thanks. Any other questions? Great. Thanks very much. Public testimony.
Yes, we have 11 people signed up. The first four, please come on up, are John Gibbon, Dan Burbanis, Melinda Missouri, and Beth Gian Siracusa.
Welcome back, John. You get the first billing.
Now I get them. I don't have a hat and I don't want bling.
Perb, but, and I think. I don't think there's a perb hat.
No, I don't think, and I don't think there should be. I appreciate that Commissioner Fritz gave me this hat a couple of years ago at a Southwest Neighborhoods event. My name is John Gibbon, and I am speaking as the West Side representative on PERB at this point. And I'll turn in my written comments in a moment. PERB's recommendation is that the City Council adopts the mayor's proposed water rate increase for fiscal year 2013-2014 of 3.6%. PERB commends the mayor for focusing the budget on Water Bureau core services. And because they are not core services and were ranked near the bottom of the water program ranking, which was discussed and approved by the BAC, the PERB supports the downsizing and redirection of some of the Water Bureau security services and the transfer of responsibilities for operation and maintenance of the city's decorative fountains to parks. PERB's review of the former action shows that it will be facilitated by the use of surveillance technology and the continued implementation of the capital improvement program that will change the character of the reservoirs. PERB looks forward to and requests that the council provide for its active and involvement in any of the discussions that the City Council has regarding the scope and direction of the Water Bureau CIP. PERB commends the Water Bureau administration for implementing management efforts to respond to the systematic decrease in water consumption and to, as much as is fiscally responsible, limit this phenomenon's impact on rates. And the CBO's effort to enhance PERB's understanding of the rate impact and strategic management of the Bureau's long-term debt is also worthy of they need to be commended for it.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And I have questions.
Thanks for your service on PERB. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Beth John Siracusa, and this is the first time I've been up in front of you, Mr. Hales, or Mayor Hales. What I'd like to say is I'm watching the water and seeing that Gail Shibley is now your chief of staff, who was actually in charge of the state water, which you mentioned earlier. I am really concerned in the sense that you are all on a plan. And that's fine if you have a regional plan that you're moving water from Canada to Mexico, and I get that. What I don't get and what I really would like to see is Plan B. I would like to see our water source held in a different place again, held in that pristine place where GE Hydro Plant, we're not cleaning up after their diesel spill in the Bull Run, where we're not running fish runs in the Bull Run to get emergency measures so that we can run this whole project over a 10-year period during the variance, because I read the lawyer letter circling every line, because lawyers are like that. The thing is that I think it's prudent that we do have a plan B, that we do take a certain percentage of this bond money, and we go ahead and revert the land that was taken and traded from state to city so that the city could get into the Bull Run, have buses, build a facility that, you know, allows lab coats and people experimenting with different things, and that's fine. The thing is that that's for the bigger picture, for our little town, for our little city, for the 1% family that lives here. We really do need to maintain those reservoirs. There's nothing wrong with them. Who was it? The man that wrote the Open Reservoir Manual for the EPA. He cited all these things that could go wrong with open reservoirs, and everything that he cited were from closed reservoirs. He spun the whole entire thing. Although he had to be really cautious because he really loved those reservoirs. He took pride in making sure that they were beautiful and they were perfect and they were well maintained. But on the other hand, he's running and getting these things set up so that he can go into private industry to run this huge plan that I feel that has been basically in the background run by the state and different things that you guys now are facing. And I think, once again, we need to look at a plan B for this because, holy cow, we have plenty of water. We like our open reservoirs. There's nothing wrong with them. Let's just put them off to the side and run everything else. You can take HDR into everything else, but basically put it back. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks. Morning.
Mr. Mayor, Commissioners, my name is Dan Bourbonnais. I'm the general manager of ELSCO. We employ approximately 200 people here in the city. I'm here to talk about the water rates and sewer rates. I've been in this city for over 30 years. I moved up here to manage ELSCO for my company. In that time, I have seen water and sewer rates skyrocket and have been a detriment to business. It's very difficult for us to continue to experience the cost increases that we have had. My company is a privately owned company that's been in business for over 100 years, and we have 72 operations in North America. Portland is the highest in our operational field for water and sewer costs. It's a detriment to employment. It has been, and it will continue to be. And what I strongly feel is that what we need to do is we need to have a top-down review of both bureaus so that maybe they can be combined, maybe jobs can be combined, eliminated, capital projects that don't need to be done, eliminated, and possibly put off to future purchases. But I have to tell you that it's extremely difficult for business to operate with these kind of cost increases that we've experienced, especially in the last 10 to 12 years. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate you being here. Thanks. Morning.
Good morning, Commissioner.
Oh, push the little button at the base of that microphone. There you go.
Good morning. Oh, hello. All right. Good morning, Commissioners. Good morning, Mayor. Good morning, other people who are listening. My name is Melinda Missouri. And I'm here mostly based on an email that I received from the Friends of the Reservoir from Floyd Jones about the fast-tracking of the disconnect of the Mount Tabor reservoirs. I was unable to reach any human beings or get any kind of confirmation or any more information besides that email. So I'm not here to testify with information. I'm mostly here with questions. My perspective is probably fairly different from most people who come and testify. I would ask that you read two books if you haven't already. One is this Harun and the Sea of Many Stories by Salman Rushdie. It is a story about polluted story waters and how stories are no longer being able to be told because the water has become polluted that feeds the stories, and how that water is cleaned up again. And another story is called The Disobedience of the Daughter of the Sun, being the sun related to the moon, not sun like your child. That is written by Martine Prechtel, and it is a translation of a Mayan tale. There are many threads in that tale, but one of them is about the water and its living water cycle and annual water cycle through the year. Primarily, I'm an educator, and I work with mostly children under 12, so it's unusual for me to be speaking to adults. But the one thing I did do in my career as an educator is work with Buckman Elementary School many years ago as an intern with a class that did a project on where Portland's water comes from. And we worked with the Water Bureau on this. The person I think's name was Tim Larkin, but I don't know if he still works there, and I don't have any contact information for him. We also worked with artists. So the children visited Bull Run. I visited Bull Run also, and we visited the water labs, and they learned about the process of where our water comes from, and they painted watercolors, and they put together a book, which may still be available through the Water Bureau, watercolor illustrations of where Portland's water comes from. And through that process, I became at least elementary
level of understanding about how our water system works and how lucky we are to have it. So I was very shocked to hear that the reservoirs are being disconnected and nobody seems to know about it. So mostly I'm here to ask that we protect our sources. I know a lot of work has already been done to that end, much of which I'm completely ignorant of, and I know that we're facing an uphill battle, but I really believe that the water system